Welcome to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines, changing the conversation around divorce. This show is sponsored by Penguin in the Room. Penguin in the Room is an award-winning arts marketing and social media management company. If you want to jazz up your socials and have someone Instagram and tweet for you, then here's your answer. Go to www.penguinintheroom.com. As always, hit subscribe to make sure you're updated about new episodes. And we love to hear from you on social media at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. You can also email us. All the info's on our website, thedivorcesocial.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I am joined by Paul Roseby, OBE, CEO and Artistic Director of the National Youth Theatre and Broadcaster. Hello.
Hello, Sam. How lovely.
Welcome to the Divorce Club.
It's fantastic. Do you like my title? It lasted longer than my marriage.
I love it. Yeah. No, you have quite a long marriage.
Actually, I think I might be one of your longest. Yeah. I'm probably one of your oldest as a result. And actually, as a result of a long marriage, I certainly look the oldest.
You look wonderful.
Oh, you say all the right things. Thank you. It's the lighting. And I think, actually, do you know what? I'm already a fraud. I'm actually not officially divorced. You know, that paperwork that just hangs on and hangs on somewhere in a cupboard somewhere. It's yet to be signed. I don't know whose fault it is. I blame everybody else but me, of course. So it's somebody else's fault. But I'm not quite officially divorced, which means, to answer your question directly, 18 years almost. We met 17, 18 years ago. So I was married for a long time. Half my adult life, actually, 16 years, half my adult life.
Wow. Well, I'm very glad to have you on because, yeah, I think you're one of our longest running marriages, which is nice. Mine only lasted for like 2 years. So it's going to be nice to hear the other side of things.
I didn't even know you were married until you got divorced. I mean, what happened there? I think that's... Did you get married to get divorced?
Yeah, I just like to achieve things quickly. I've always been a fast mover. So I was like, we need to get these milestones out of the way.
Brilliant. I mean, literally, you didn't even have to change the sheets. It was that quick.
Well, I only changed my name on my Tesco club card. So that was very straightforward, just because that's the only thing I had to change back. Did either of you change your name? Or did you keep your own surnames?
No. No, I retained Roseby and he still remained a C-U-N-T. And it felt like that was the right thing to do. Gay friends of mine who got married, because this is the thing really about gay couples getting divorced. It's relatively new in the gay world because we weren't allowed to get married until 2000 or civil partnered until about 2006. And if I remember going on the first day, it was the day that Elton John and David Furnish got married. And I was not at that wedding.
But I was at the
wedding in the afternoon, which was the B-list version of the A-list. And it was this couple called Gary and Phil. And I worked with Gary as a chippy in one of those dreadful makeover shows I used to present. And so they had this brilliant, brilliant wedding. It was so unbelievably okay driven at the Grosvenor Hotel. And it was the first ever civil partner wedding. before David and Elton, and they decided to have bridesmaids dressed as brides. Melinda Messenger, there was Katie Price, amongst others, and all the groomsmen. There was this brilliant sort of puffball meringue type dresses, and all the groomsmen were naked from the waist up, bar nipple clamps and angel wings. So the nipple clamps were attached to the angel wings, which were twice the width of the gangway they had to walk down. Now, you and I know about rehearsing. We come from theatrical stock in that way about where we started. And they did not rehearse this. So you've got this very awkward, double-breasted, massive angel wings with big puffball dresses, Jordan and everybody. It was chaos down the aisle already. And all of us just simultaneously laughed, and not the great start to a tasteful beginning to the wonderful world of equality, where men can get married to each other and women can get married to each other. I should have known then that it would have been a disaster for myself and my partner. We were actually there. We were going out with each other. We did make our excuses and leave early. I think it was because OK didn't want to take pictures of us. So I was furious. So we actually said, we've got to go because we're off to Elton and David. So anyway, that was how not to get married, I think.
Well, I think I'm going to take a lot of that on board for my, if I have a second wedding. I like the idea of nipple clamps attached to wings. Well, you're very welcome in the divorce club, even though you're not officially divorced, because I wasn't divorced for the first three seasons of this podcast either, because I'd got my decree nisi, and then I thought, oh, it'll all be over in a minute. So I started the podcast, and three seasons later, I've only just officially been divorced.
That is, well, congratulations. How does it feel? How do you feel about it genuinely? Do you feel relieved?
I feel, yeah. I've always used that phrase generally in my other life. Oh, it's like a weight off my shoulders, you know, when something gets sorted. And I don't think I've ever truly meant it until I got my divorce paperwork, because it really was like, I didn't realize how much it was weighing down on me, because it is only a piece of paper and we've separated like 2.5 years ago. And, you know, I'm living in the house now and I've changed it and made it all my own and taken it over. So it's, but yeah, it was, I had a laugh cry.
Did you?
When I received it, because you get it as an email attachment.
Did you?
Yeah.
In your trash box, it might have been there for months. That's why it's taken so long. It was actually in your delete box.
No, because your solicitor sends it to you. But yeah, they send it as an email attachment, and also because it's all official, they say please see attached in regards to your divorce proceeding. So they don't even say. I've said in I think it was my roundup episode for series three. I wanted there to be like confetti, you know, in the email, like popping up in it to say congratulations. But it was just all very formal. So then I got dressed up and had a photo shoot in my own house because it's locked down. Yeah.
Did you? Good for you. Yeah. I think that's the thing. I think when it comes through, I think I might just have my own civil partnership ceremony where I just marry myself. I think I might do some some of that loving stuff. I think it does hang over you. I think that's really very astute of you. I didn't recognize it until you're saying it now. Because, you know, separation, you leave your marital home, whatever it's called, depending which lawyer you speak to. And God knows I've spoken to a few. So you just don't know how you're meant to behave. You don't know how you're meant to feel. As you said before, there's no handbook to this. There is no right way or wrong way. We don't know. We're not equipped. And as a gay guy, I mean, we weren't equipped to get married, let alone get divorced. I mean, you end up in a way mimicking your parents in marriage. We both did, I think, because there are no other role models. You know, we weren't brought up by gay parents who were married. So you sort of facilitate that heteronormal way. And in doing so, you become your parents. I mean, all of it was just mucking our way through and feeling our way through. And I just wish there was a way of sort of studying divorce as much as there is about obsessing around marriage or the wedding bit, you know. We need as much emphasis on divorce and studying that as we do about, oh, who are you going to invite and what you're going to wear and what you're going to eat and where you're going to do it? Well, it doesn't need to be a big thing, but it should be a big thing. Did you do that? Oh, we did that. You know, and you don't have the equivalent for divorce, but I think we should, which is what's great about this. I love it. This is therapy for me. This is brilliant.
Well, this is exactly why I started the podcast, because I was like, no one talks about divorce and I'm getting divorced and I just want to talk to some other people and see what they did.
Yeah, because there's still a stigma about it, I think. I don't know whether you feel, I don't know whether it's a generational thing. I mean, I feel it's a failure. You know, I felt, rejection's one thing. And in the business we inhabit, we're used to rejection. But from your husband, when you're just used to calling him husband, and then you're rejected, and then you have to admit that you're divorced, it just sticks. You know, it doesn't really, it's not something you can be proud of. It's about what you're not, not what you are. It's about taking away, not adding, culturally in this country. So it's really tough. It's an odd one. It's a bit of a mindfuck, actually. Can I say mindfuck?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. You can.
A mindfuck.
You can say all the swear words if you like.
Woo! We've got a more to come.
We're talking about divorce. I feel like it needs to be an explicit content podcast. I think that's really interesting what you said there, because it is about taking something away. And no one's ever said it like that before, but I totally agree and understand that, because people look at you like you've lost something, even if the divorce for you, you know, the divorce for me has been incredibly tough, but also incredibly rewarding and exciting and freeing, but people don't view it that way. And I'm interested to know, because you mentioned as a gay man, you didn't have, you know, role models of gay married couples. Do you think you're treated differently as a gay man who is divorced?
Oh, yes. I mean, oh my God. I mean, where do you start on that one? Good question. Some people don't take it seriously because you're only a gay man. So it's not the same, is it? It's not the same if you're divorced, if you're gay, because you're only gay anyway. So you're already a subclass, a subservient of some kind of institution that is predominantly a heterosexual right, not a gay right. And then we all fought long and hard for the gay rights to be equal, which of course means you can equally be divorced. But interestingly, it comes into assets. One of the hardest things I've found about divorce is that you have to prove your value and your worth at a point when you can't even get up in the morning or off the floor, is that you have been beaten into submission by rejection and shock and horror for me. And then you have to fight. And then you have to fight for your worth. Now, as us, as artists, as gay people, whatever, you know, you feel you have to fight and justify your breath more times than you realize in your adult life. And then you've got to do it again with the person that you loved and love and respect. It is shocking. It is beyond filth. It is absolutely unbelievable. It is the biggest challenge I've certainly ever faced. I mean, you know, I'm 54.
You don't.
And I know, I don't look it. Thanks, Sam. I'm 54. I cried more in 2 years than I had in the 52 years before. There wasn't a single day where I didn't uncontrollably lose the plot. And then everything conspires against you because you feel like, well, am I equal? Am I allowed to do this, actually? And the law says that you are. The law is there to protect gay marriage, same-sex marriages. It is there. But it is also not. There is also a subclass, a sub-choice where, yeah, but really, nah. I remember I went to the lawyer. I was recommended to go to a lawyer by my husband, and who got some advice from his lawyer, who initially is his twin brother, who's quite a well-known divorce barrister. Note to self, you're going to get married. Make sure there's no divorce barrister in the family. Quite a successful one as well. So I thought, okay, I was presented with a shocking kind of badly written email around basically my value. And it said, you know, obviously you must seek some advice. So I did. And I went to three, rule of three, always go for three, apparently. And two out of the three said, how much have you got? how much, it's so brutal, Sarah. It's so bloody brutal, because I just didn't want to talk any of that. I just wanted to sit down and talk. I didn't want to talk about money or anything like that. And they said, how much have you got? Have you got any savings? I said, well, no, not really. I've spent it. I just had a lovely life. I didn't know it was going to happen. I felt like an absolute twat. And said, well, how much have you got? And I told them, I said, well, that's going to be your battle pot. You'll use that up just for fighting. So I put on the armor ready for this battle, and I realized that the armor didn't fit. And I thought, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to play into the language and the business of lawyers. You know, if I have to do that, it's going to kill me. I'd still be doing it now. We'd still be in some battle. And the only people that win are lawyers in this situation. So I sort of just in a sort of semi-comatose state, just went along with the whole process and felt better. It felt like I was making peace with myself and the situation. And I didn't fight for what I could have done. But I fought for my dignity and my self-respect, which is worth so much more than anything else. You go back to who you were before you were married. You go, wait a minute, hang on. This doesn't define me. I had a brilliant marriage. I was happiest, I thought. The A-gays, smug, couple of smugs and a four-wheel drive. Absolute naffers shit. But absolutely, you know, it was great. But actually you go, no. I had a complete life and career before this. So you have to kind of realize who you were and kind of make love to that person. You've got to date your past and somehow slice out your marriage as just a piece of another bit of cake that maybe gave you a bit of indigestion, you know, that you won't try again. And I think that's how I got through it. So, but did I feel equal? No. Did I feel wronged? Yes. Am I angry? Slightly. Am I happy? Sometimes. You know, so I just think, oh, you know what? It's you make your choices and respect yourself more than anything else, and you'll make the right choice, whatever.
Yeah, it's such a hard one, I think. And I can totally relate in that, you know, my breakup started amicably. So we both sat, so he brought up the conversation before, then I went away, sort of thought about it and thought, oh, I'm going to, so this was when, I always say this, it sounds ridiculous, but I was flown to Vegas to watch Magic Mike Live, and then I was working with Channing Tatum in LA on the script.
Of course you were.
Yeah. So that was at the time when I was considering whether my marriage should end or continue. So in the back of my mind, it was sort of working away, but I thought, no, we're going to work through it. And it wasn't until I got home, saw him face to face, I just knew it was over. So we actually had this lovely conversation where we just spoke to each other and, you know, both decided the same thing. So I was very, and I think if you listen back to series one of the podcast, I'm very like, everything's lovely. We're going to be best friends. And everyone I interviewed was like, okay, sure. I'll talk to you in a year or so and we'll see. And I think the hardest thing that I found was that financial stage, because to begin with, I was, you know, even though I half made the decision, I felt really upset that I was losing this marriage and that it was a failure, you know, like we're told. And I was going through all of that. And then when it got to the finances, I was like, oh, I just want everything to be fair and I don't mind. And then all of a sudden I found that I had to like stick up for myself. Otherwise I wouldn't be left with anything.
So you did go down that legal route to the end point about where the judge will decide what the decision is within your financial agreement. So did you talk about it personally with each other first and come to a conclusion, or was it all through lawyers?
So we talked about it a bit personally, and then it was a bit through the solicitors back and forth until we came up with that agreement, and then the judge sort of goes, all right, yeah, that's fine. But that back and forth was really hard, you know, and you find out that there's a pot of money that you didn't know about and things like that. And it just, I feel like that was the worst stage for me, but it also made me sit up and go, right,
yeah,
you're looking after you now. You're not looking after you as a unit anymore. And even though I didn't want to fight for, like, you know, because lawyers and solicitors say things like, oh, well, you can get half of their pension. And I was like, I don't want any of that. I just want what is mine. You know, I had an inheritance from my dad basically the house, and I didn't want to lose that. And I think it was one of the hardest things to stand up for myself, but I am also glad I did it. I mean, in moments I'm like, I could have got more.
Yeah. Oh, and there are those big moments. And do they sometimes fill an entire day, those moments when you're paying your bills and you go, I could have got more. I should have got more. You know, it's like...
Yeah, especially when my tax bill just came up and I was like, if I had a fourth a little bit larger, I'd have a bigger pot to be playing with.
It's very true. And unfortunately, it's the ugly side of the separation of the divorce, is it comes down to whose CD is this? It's like your first breakup with your best mate or your flatmate. That's my CD. And doesn't matter if it's got scratches on it, doesn't matter if it doesn't work or not, doesn't matter if you don't like the music. That's mine. I'm having it. I brought it in. I'm taking it out. And, you know, that's what I did with the furniture in the house. I took more or less everything I could or put into a van or two or three because I just felt... But that's what we agreed. We decided to agree. We agreed without lawyers, much to my lawyers, not disgust, just disappointment in the fact that I think they thought that I was certainly, I could have got a lot more, and said, are you sure? And then they said, well, as long as you're happy with it. And again, you're not happy about any of it. So you can't bring in the emotion happy to say that's how you judge your decision. You're not happy, full stop. You know, in a way, you should probably wait for 10 years before you make the financial decision if you could, because you're just in this sort of this washing machine, and you're not, you don't come out clean. You come out like an odd sock, a missing odd sock, you know, and you go, did I make the right? What was that fog all about? No, I don't. Anyway, so the lawyers are there for a good reason, and they're very, very decent people, really. Even my ex-brother-in-law, I say, is a very decent person. So, you know, so I just think you there's a sense of you can't live with the regret. That's the issue, and otherwise it eats you up, and you just can't let it happen. So. You think, you know, well, okay, we'll make it work. And I was ready to wind down, and now I'm ready to wind up, because I have to work harder, and I have to do more. I have to be more ambitious again. And I was living in a very comfortable life. I had a really brilliant time, because also you, in a way, you don't age the same way in a marriage. You don't, having been, you know, the long marathon of marriage, you don't count the years so much as you do when you're on your own. You're not so, because you're aging together. So you're sharing that. Whatever the age difference is, you are still aging together. And that's what's great about marriage. It's brilliant, you know. So things start to slip or change or shift or get bigger or smaller, whatever. They shrink, they enlarge, whatever. But, you know, it's happening together. You share the biology, love it or loathe it, lick it or mop it. You absolutely share the biology together. That's the journey you're on. You're aging all the time. So I sort of started as a, you know, mid to late 30s guy, quite sprightly up for it, full head of hair, la, 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 still got a telly career, started the National Youth Theatre, feeling pretty okay. Life's fabulous. Married this really hot guy, fabulous. And then I've just been through the entire series of Doctor Who, Time Warp. I come out the other end, 16, 17 years later, and I've got a white beard, and I don't recognise myself. I go, I've just become somebody's blimmin' daddy. And suddenly, you know, you're called a daddy in the gay world. Suddenly, wait, what happened there? I didn't want kids. I barely wanted a dog. I am now everybody's daddy. And then you have to sell yourself in a world that has changed completely, because after a long marriage, I was faithful. We were both faithful. And so it wasn't about another person. And so suddenly I have to promote myself on gay dating apps and sex apps. And I had to sell my career and who I was all the time. But now I had to sell myself sexually. Alcohol did that really well before. You know, alcohol was the absolute great salesperson for sex. You didn't need dating apps. You just needed a large drink or 10. And that was it. And you often ended up living with these people right or wrong. And now it's dating apps. And I find that really... Oh, the language, everything shocked me so much. So I, you know, when he dumped me, I grew a beard and I started planking, and I got my waist back.
Is planking just like doing the plank? That's not a term, a sexual term that I'm not aware of. Okay. Yeah.
It's not a youth. It's not. It probably is. It probably is actually. I'm still on the letter B with the new terminology of dating. It's absolutely horrendous. Other than the fact that I know I'm a daddy, which is the most insulting, objectifying thing that someone's ever blimmin' well said to me.
Do you have you written daddy on your profile?
No, I haven't. I just happen to have a beard that's slightly white. And, you know, I look like an out-of-date Santa. It's absolutely shocking.
No, it's a very stylish beard. It's not a Santa beard.
Thank you. More Clooney than Santa. Yeah. Thank you. But I have to say, I find it really shocking now. Hello, sexy daddy. I'm not your daddy. Sod off. thank you for the sexy bit, not for the daddy bit. It's a real thing, you know. It's a real thing in the gay world of dating apps that there are a lot of young guys that really go for daddies. And you're supposed to take that as a compliment. I think it's an absolute insult. I also think, guys, go out with people your own age. It's like, don't come near. I can't. This is shocking. And there's a culture that really is about, I need a daddy in my life. I'm really shocked. I'm such a prude. So then I have to learn all this terminology. Then I have to get fit. Then I have to literally take dick pics of my own dick. You know, like I literally, because everybody then just, you know, hello, daddy, show us your dick. Okay, that's a really good chat up line. That's really sexy.
Straight in. I remember talking to a gay friend of mine who'd recently split up when I'd recently split up from my ex. And we were both on dating apps. And I remember him telling me, you know, how different the world of gay dating apps was to heterosexual dating apps. I mean, I date men and women, but, you know, and I remember him being like, I have to get fit now. Like, that's the thing. I just have to do it. Otherwise, I won't meet anyone on gay dating apps.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, God, I'm like the opposite. I've just been overeating. So I just post a cleavage photo as far.
but actually, it's what, well, you look bloody great, I tell you. You really do. You look very sexy and very well. So I think, I mean, actually, that's the beauty of dating sites as well, is that whatever your preference and whatever your size or shape or whatever, there is definitely a niche for you. And I find it exhausting having to invest. A friend of mine said, he said, you go on dating apps, you have to do it every day. You have to do it religiously. If you want to do this, you have to really work it. Now, I went to the chiropractor, not because I did my back in, but because I did my thumb in. Because through sexting, this manic-like response, I'm quite witty, but I can't quite type as fast as I can speak, so how am I going to do this? And I literally had this RSI injury all the way up my arm to my back, and it took weeks of therapy to get rid of the pain. Because I was in this tense state of, I will be happy again. I will find somebody. This is, I'm really good at this. I can do this. I can sell myself. And look at me. Look how fit my stomach is now. You know, sort of like. And it's
so
just
you
this.
Had a sexting injury.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm proud of that. and I did join Guardian Soulmates and it went bust. That was my first app. Thank you very much, Guardian. I know. So, you know, it was, and that was around before I got married, obviously. But these other apps really weren't. And it's, I don't know about you. I don't know whether you feel you're meeting the people that you should meet that are part of your tribe or that you fancy.
No.
Do you feel connected?
I talk a lot about on the podcast about my sexual explosion, which happened after the separation. And, you know, I was performing in Magic Mike with 15 semi-naked professional dancers every
yes.
night.
Yes.
And I was like talking about sex and like being empowered to ask for what you want, like on stage. And at the same time, I just got divorced and I was just so excited when people found me attractive and sexy. And I was very impulsive. And I was like, I fancy that person. If they fancied me too, and everyone was consensual, I'd just have sex with them. You know, it was just like, and it was wonderful. I've definitely calmed down now.
Yeah.
But
have
so
you?
I think
have
for
you
that,
calmed down now? You're just well, saying yeah. that in front of me. Yeah, yeah.
No, I have. I mean, unfortunately, I wish I hadn't because I had a great time. But so I think in that phase, dating apps were great because I used to describe them as a little black book of people you haven't had sex with yet. So it's, you don't have to go back to the past of people. You could just find someone new. And so I did find people I was attracted to and, you know, we had a lot of fun. But now I'm sort of more looking for someone I can have a conversation with after the sex. I find that quite difficult on dating apps because...
Yeah.
I feel like people I really connect with in the chats, I then meet with them and we don't connect in person and vice versa. And so it's kind of impossible to tell.
it's because it's unreal. We have the same situation. I might be interviewing somebody on Zoom and go, great. And then you meet them in the flesh, give them the job. And then you go, not great. You have to meet people in the flesh. No matter what is going on with lockdown, everybody's feeling quite secure in one way and enjoying some of the remoteness and the digitalness. And of course, we're all hating the fact that we're not interactive and as tactile as we all deserve to be. But, you know, I think you've got to get it over with as soon as possible. Don't make this dating lark a thing of just sexting and everything else and swapping pictures and things. It's unreal. It's really, we've moved on from Jane Austen. As you know, it's not about writing to each other. It's about meeting each other. It's about touching each other. That's how you learn, is through touch. And I miss that. I really miss that physicality when I was unceremoniously I had to leave our marital bed, and I was still living in the house for over a year, and I sort of moved upstairs, and I was sort of negotiating my way around what was my bedroom, and I was being replaced by sort of softer lighting, and pictures of us were being faced down on bookshelves and stuff, and I was being ceremoniously, slowly killed, that our relationship was being squeezed out, but I was still in the relationship and still in the house. And I was being replaced by crystals, you know, like, so pictures would be removed and crystals would be put in their place. And I thought, God, am I that bad a person? Am I that much of an evil queen? You know, he's gone upstairs. I've got to put the crystals out. You know, it's like, this is it. I'm like, oh my God.
So he was living in the bedroom.
We sort of separated within our sex life. Obviously that stopped. It stopped dramatically, as in we stopped sleeping together once he said, it's over. I believed him. I wasn't going to question it, weirdly, even though it was a hell of a shock. I still thought, yeah, sort of thing you do. Yeah, that's right. That's it, isn't it? He also said that I wasn't dumped because of another person or because I thought we were particularly unhappy. There were stress points, as there are in any marriage, through work and choices and life and other things going on. He said that the intimacy and joy that we once had, he now has with the Druids, because he was a Druid. He became a Druid 5 years before and was very keen on spirituality and other worlds and other places, other planes, in pursuit of light and truth, which said to me that I'm not light and I'm not truth. I'm darkness of lies and I'm banished upstairs. So I accepted it straight away because I thought, I can't argue that. I can't argue it, but I have to live. I wanted to still be there because we both decided that, weirdly, we kind of got on still. And I go into that default thing in crisis. I don't know about you, but I make light of everything. And I'm quite good in a crisis. Okay, make decisions. Okay, I'll just go upstairs. That's fine. It's fine. It's fine. Okay, we'll get over it. Yeah, okay. No, great. That's what you want. But fine. Look at me. I'm absolutely fine. Absolutely great. Never felt better. Really good, actually. So, you know, no cracks on me. And that was it. And actually, we had quite a few weeks, months, just skirting around the major issue and making each other laugh. But at the same time, I could see my world slip away and his world take over physically. And physically, I missed that intimacy. I'd been sharing a bed with somebody for 17, 18 years. And everybody goes, oh, it must have been great. You must have to stretch out and whatever. I still now sleep on the left side of the bed. I still now kind of, oh no, it's not, it's on the right side of the bed. Oh, whatever, a different side. No, I still sit, no, what am I talking about? It depends which way you're looking. Depends which way you're lying. But anyway, so I haven't inhabited the middle part of the bed. I'm going, way, I can stretch out. I still think there's somebody next to me. I still operate like that.
That's so, I still do that too.
Do
I still sleep on my side of the bed. I bought a new bed because I'm still in the house. So I bought a new bed and, you know, decorated and changed the space up. And I took down the photos of our wedding, but I left up the photos from the wedding of just me because I look really nice in them.
You're quite right, Danny. Beautiful.
But yeah, I still sleep on my side of the bed. Weirdly, my cat sleeps on the pillow next to me. So my cat has become my husband. But I think for me that was one of the hardest things, and still is, being in the bed on your own without just intimacy wise. Cause I feel like you can, you know, you can find sex if that's what you need, but just having someone lying next to you and like breathing next to you sounds really sad, but that like,
no, I know, what are we like? I know. And the cat doesn't do it for you. That's what you're saying.
No,
I refuse.
It's better than nothing.
It's furry and it's furry and it breathes and it's quite nice to touch, but at the same time, it doesn't make breakfast for you and it doesn't actually stimulate you, in other words. But this is bizarre, but the first, you said, let's go for it. The first,
I love it.
The first penis I touched, sorry, other than my own and my husband's, was my dad's. And I tasted tried, not in a sexual way, obviously, but at the same time, it was done by Drew.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
And so he dumped me, and Mama just died, and Dad was dying slowly. And so I would go up and drive up to this nursing home that he was in. Still very complimentous, but he was frail. And if you've ever had ailing relatives, parents, partners, whatever, you know, invariably you see everything and touch everything. And at one point I found myself in this toilet with Dad. And for some reason I was holding his penis so he could go to the toilet. So I was still standing up and I was holding him up. He was very weak. And he looked at me. I want to say, don't look at me, just look at the bloody pan, Dad, keep it in. But then I was in control of it, so he could look anywhere. And he said, has it come to this, Paul? Has it come to this? I said, Dad, yes, I'm afraid it has. I wanted to say, I haven't touched cock since this is the first time since my husband. So I didn't, obviously. Or did I? No, I didn't. But it was a bizarre cold moment where I thought it really echoed the loss in so many ways. I'm losing my parents. I've lost my husband. I lost a couple of friends along the way as well. And you go, this is bleak and it's graphic, you know. And also, Dad, at the age of 90-odd, had a bigger one than me. And I was also going, what happened there? Jesus, it's bad enough to be dumped by a druid. Now I find out that my dad, you know, 45 years older than me, has a bigger cock. Can't this world get any worse?
maybe it grows over time.
Well, I hope, like, yeah. Earlobes. I'm hoping that you sort of, like, exactly,
nose,
they get
hair,
bigger and bigger.
Earlobes, penises.
Let's hang on to that. Anyway, further down the line, I did start to have sex thanks to dating apps. And it was very weird. I don't know about you, but did you play the comparison game the first time? Did you notice? Could you get your ex out of your mind and out of your bed, metaphorically?
Yeah, I think I could. I think I was weird. I was very worried that I was going to cry during the first sexual encounter, and when I didn't, I was just so thrilled. And actually, I found that my head was very taken up with what was going on, so it was lovely. So I didn't. I mean, more. I would say more post the act. If there was any comparison, it would happen then. But during, I was very surprised in a good way to find that I could just... And also, I guess for me, it felt very different because it was, you know, more casual and spontaneous and fun. It didn't feel like a relationship like my marriage had done. So it was sort of... I sort of compartmentalized it, I think, in a different sort of section of my sexual brain.
Yes, because you can. It's interesting. You can do that. I was surprised at how I couldn't do it as much as I thought I could do. But I think that makes me a kind of very genuinely monogamous. I find juggling and dating more than one person quite low, because of the option of dating apps gives you that freedom massively. So I find that quite, I can't be duplicitous, but I have learned to enjoy sex in a very different way with different people. You have to teach yourself that again. I mean, maybe it's, I don't know. I don't, I, you know, it's a, also gay men, you know, don't talk about sex. They have it on apps and they talk about what they like and what they don't like. I mean, I still can't work out which way the arrow is supposed to go, whether you're a top or a bottom. I still can't work it out. You know, so I passed my driving test very late in life. I think I'm going to pass my gay sex test, but even later, because I thought, what is it? Am I a top or a bottom? Which arrow am I supposed to show? I don't show any arrow. I don't know. Some of your listeners might be confused by that, but it's really whether you're passive or whether you like penetration or whether you give it or whether you take it. It's so graphic.
So you put that on like your dating profile.
Yeah. You have to. Well, you don't have to, but you can do it. It's on many profiles.
Yeah.
So everything is unromanticized, let's say. Everything is so brilliantly but brutally obvious that you then are living in a very different world. So what I mean about this Doctor Who time warp, you know, after a long marriage, you come out, you go, I need to learn new language. I need to learn new positions. I'm judged differently. I'm older. I'm not wiser. I'm younger. I don't get it. So it's interesting. It's really interesting. And once you embrace the new, once you embrace that, you go, well, great. I'm experiencing it. I'm not shutting down. I'm opening up, you know.
That's what I found kind of at the time confusing, but now I'm like, wow, it helped me get back to myself again, because I had to learn what new me is like, you know, because when I met my ex, I just out of university in drama school, and then I was with him, you know, for the whole of my 20s. So now I'm in my 30s and I've, you know, experienced a lot more sex, yes, in my marriage, but just, you know, generally. And then it's about finding out what you like again, because you've been with one person for so long and you have a sort of way of working with them, and an unspoken agreement of they know you know like
how
this.
To, well, let's be blunt. You know how to come quickly with your husband or your wife, you know, you just do. Yeah, it's right. Yeah,
you work it out. It's efficiency. after years and years, you're like, this is what does it.
That's right.
And so new people with new, you know, new and different shaped body parts, you know, what worked in your marriage, if you tell someone to do exactly that, won't necessarily work, you know, with this new person. So I found it kind of an amazing process to work out what I liked again and like explore a little bit, like sexually. And I feel like it helped me bring me back to me.
Yeah, I think that's the brilliant thing. And that's where you learn to adapt and you enjoy the adaptation more than the original novel. It's like, oh, the adaptation of this is a much better movie than the book. And that's what you need to hang on to. All those that are going through it and coming out the other end or thinking about it, you know, there is life, no matter what your age or whatever your preference, there is life there. And friends would always say to me, don't let this define you. You are going to find somebody. But I thought, well, it's not that I want to get married again. It's not that I want to do that. It's not what I'm out to do and get it right. Because statistically, apparently, if you've been divorced once, you're going to be divorced again.
Oh, wow.
And somebody I was dating told me that, who was also going through a divorce. And I thought, well, this is quite serious. This is quite cute. Actually, we're kind of physically all right. And then he started asking me about marriage. And I thought, hello, you're a bit keen. What's this about? He just said, well, you know, of course, we'd be doomed anyway, because we're more likely to get divorced second time around than the first time around. I thought, well, okay, we're not getting married anyway. So that's that. But it's a strange thing. And then you kind of, I think we're all damaged, but you meet more damaged people the older you get as well. So then you do look to younger people that are less damaged. And then you do become that daddy you don't want to be. And then you're stuck in this cycle of, you know, but I don't know. I think you can be happy again, and you can find yourself. What you're talking about, you being you before, is vitally important. We all hang on to that. Because there's a reason why somebody wanted to marry us, and that hasn't changed. None of that changes. And and somebody wanted to marry you again for that very same reason. Whether you say yes or not is utterly your choice, and how brilliant. But that's what we are. We don't actually change that much.
Yeah, I really like that. I think sometimes when you're getting divorced, you can feel like it's worse than, you know, some ages you're kind of shamed for being single and not in a relationship or not in a marriage.
Yeah.
And then once you're divorced, you're like, oh my God, this is even worse than being single because I failed at marriage. But actually, someone wanted to marry us.
That's right. Yes. Yes.
I wanted to ask you more actually about what helped you during that time. Was there anything that kind of friends did at that time? I'm just thinking, if someone's listening and their friend is going through this, what's useful?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, again, this is, so I know this is supposed to be great and funny, and it is, and you are, and brilliant. Actually, I went, when it was over, I said, this is going to kill me. And it came from nowhere, and I said that, it's going to kill me. And there were times when I really thought it was going to kill me. And there were times when I really thought about killing myself in a way that I thought, this is going to happen. And very seriously. I mean, a lot of people feel like that and don't do it. And I'm one of those people. But that's not to say that it wasn't serious enough for friends to be concerned and check in on a daily basis. And to be fair to my ex, he did call a couple of people to say, watch him. Just watch him. Because he's vulnerable. And we know he shouldn't be fooled by it. And so my great friend Emma was just wonderful on a daily basis as well. And I was sent podcasts and things about building yourself up and listening to other voices and laughing. You know, in crisis, in shock, we as humans know how to laugh. It's a release button. I laughed so much and I cried so much. As long as you're doing something that's expelling air pre-COVID, you know, without the mask, so that it absolutely is joyous. As long as you're feeling something, it's right. You're healing, be it upset, be it tears or laughter. Invariably the same thing. I started doing voice notes. I started talking to myself. Sorry. I started recording myself on a daily basis, or every other day, where I would just talk absolute dark thoughts. And by doing it and by placing it, I could put it away. And it meant I could get on with the rest of the day. I'd got rid of those gremlins in your head were then placed on an iPhone somewhere that I'll never listen to. I think I've got about 560 voice notes.
Wow.
And I suppose one day I might listen to them, some of them. A lot of it is just the moment I switch on the button, I cry. And I can't get my words out. And then I switch off and then I don't cry. And then it's ridiculous. But it's an outlet. It's a digital outlet.
It's like a diary.
It is. It's a diary for depressed divorcees. But honestly, it's such a lonely business, divorce. It's so hideous. And because also it invariably involves paperwork and stuff that is, as I say, it feels so alien. And you can get married so quickly, but divorce is so painfully long. You know, it's all wrong. It's absolutely all wrong. So there needs to be a place like Dignitas that you can go to, Divorcitas, where you could go to a little place, a little village. You go, I'm just going there for the weekend. I'm coming back and it's all sorted. And there we go. And that's it. But you still live. Why can't we do that? Why is it? Why is an entire...
The next town on from Gretna Green should be the divorce town.
Absolutely. That is it. Actually, that is a great idea. There's a business there waiting to happen.
Do you, just to wrap up, do you remember a time when you thought, you know, since the separation, when you thought, I'm going to be okay? This is all right.
I do. I do several times, but actually there was probably a very vivid moment where, and when I moved here where I am now, I'm talking from, it was a real shock. It was a real shock to me. I just thought, I didn't even look at anywhere else to really to buy or to look or to live in. I just said yes to this. Like the first thing that opened its doors, I can't have it. And there was one morning I woke up and I had a dog and there were people that just spoke to me with the dog. And I love the area. I love the spontaneity of the people that I spoke to. And I couldn't help but smile. I was just smiling. And I felt, God, if the only thing I ever marry again is my dog, the people that you meet that are dog lovers, the people that you meet that are just in this time around here are unique, wonderful characters. And we have moments together. And they made me smile. And I loved being on my own. I thought, gosh, actually, I am all right. I'm actually really good on my own. And this makes me happy. This is simple stuff. This is beautiful stuff. And I walked and I thought, I belong here because I'm here. Nobody else is here other than the bloody dog. But that's it. I thought, this is great. And just these sweet people that I don't need to know much about. There's no commitment to them. They're just dog walkers. But they're... You know, they're sort of anonymous friends and a bit like dogs in a funny sort of way, anonymous friends. And they're just, that's it. It felt great. And I thought, great. I love it. And I got his kitchen window. I can see out onto this little park opposite. And I see people walk past and I don't know who they are. And they're quite urban. It's not suburban area. It's pretty urban sort of. And it feels real. It feels real. I'm not living a type. I'm not living a thing. I'm not living a cliche. I'm not living a type of marriage with a type of husband. And I am living me. And the view outside is pretty good.
What a wonderful place to finish. Where can people follow you online and find out more about you and the National Youth Theatre?
So we've got a fabulous website, www.nyt.org.uk. I'm really crap at social media. I know I've got to get better at it. I am on Instagram. I've just started, which is Paul Roseby, originally titled Paul Roseby. During the first lockdown, I took loads of pictures of things that had been left on the ground. Dumped, but just inanimate objects that have been dumped. And I've yet to share them. I'm sort of going to collate them and do them at some point as I want to do a podcast called Dumped by a Druid, but isn't actually about divorce or anything. It's about something completely different.
Well, you're very welcome to do one about divorce change. As well. It's not like I've cornered the market.
Yes, no. I know you don't own divorce. You have. I think you should. It's good. You deserve to. You can follow on Insta or I don't do Twitter, as you know. I'm shit at getting back to you. But I am there, Roseby P as well.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, hi. Thank you for listening to The Divorce Social with me, Samantha Baines. Please leave us a review. Please, please. It would be super nice. They're lovely to read. They keep me cheery and happy and keep me going. But also, it affects our listing in the podcast charts, which are very important because that's how more people find the podcast. And I'd love to help more people get through those really tough heartbreak and divorce times. And they're more likely to find us if we're higher up on the charts. So if you'd like to leave a review, I'd love you forever. You can leave them on iTunes is the big one, or most podcast platforms do them as well. I'll take all the reviews you've got to give. You can also get in contact on Twitter and Instagram at DivorcePod and at Samantha Baines. We have a website, thedivorcesocial.com, and we have a Patreon account, which means that you can support the podcast for as little as £2 a month. And it helps me with all the admin costs. It also means you have access to our 90s style divorce and heartbreak chat room. And there's lots of exclusives on there, little bits of audio that you don't get in the main podcast, and some giveaways as well. So I'd love to see you over on Patreon. That's patreon.com/Samantha Baines. And please leave a review. Did I say that already? Ready, please leave a review. Love you forever.